Oh, by the way, you turned 21 yesterday. 21. Happy birthday. That's right.
Okay.
All right. Well, turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 9. Look at Matthew chapter 9. I do appreciate the opportunity to preach while I'm here for a very short amount of time. I wasn't expecting to because I was only here for about a week, but I do appreciate it anyway. My message tonight is much more simple than it has been in the past. Some messages take a while to explain, to exposit a text in order for you to understand what it's saying, all the ins and outs of what he's trying to mean, or all the things that can be gleaned from the passage that we might not seem at face value. Some things take a little longer to explain because it may take a little longer for you to be reminded of all the things that you already know. But some messages, like the one I'm preaching tonight, doesn't need as much explanation because they're things that we already know, we forget, but it really comes down to whether or not we choose to obey it. There was a preacher that I was listening to this past semester, and he wasn't the greatest preacher in the world, and he was good to listen to, and he had a good message. I even wrote down one of the things he said, and it's on one of my front screens in my phone because I really enjoyed it, but he wasn't the most dynamic preacher that you've ever listened to. And he even said, though, I might not be the best preacher you've heard, and I might not have the funniest illustrations, and I might not have the most dynamic preaching style, but really that doesn't make a big difference, because if you go home and you say, wow, that was a great message to listen to, but you do nothing about it, it means nothing. The only thing that really affects you with a message is if you go home and apply it to your life. And there's a lot of things in the Bible that we already know, but we just choose not to obey them. Or we listen to messages and we enjoy them, but we go home without actually applying them to our life. And that's the kind of message that I have tonight. Sometimes we think that the things in the Bible are obligatory to us. Like, it's just something that's an extra burden on our schedule or on our lives or on our daily walk, just something else we have to do. But I was listening to other messages this semester, and we had a preaching contest. So a whole bunch of preachers preach all right in a row. I wasn't able to listen to as many as I wanted to, but I listened to the 5 messages after mine, and the several messages right after I preached all had a theme. The first one was, the love of Christ should be what constrains you. That should be your motivation to doing anything. The second message was, if you love me, keep my commandments. And then the third message was, if ye do these things, happy are ye if you do them. And I just thought that was really cool. We should love God, but if we do love God, then we'll keep his word. And if we keep his word, that's what brings joy. It's not an obligation to keep his word. It's a source of fulfillment. So this is what our message would be for tonight. Matthew chapter 9. Very familiar passage in verse 35. And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to give your word tonight, and I know that I can't speak to the hearts of these people, but Lord, I pray that tonight that you would use your word to remind us of the things that we already know to do, and you would remind us of that which sometimes slips out of our life, and as we go with our daily walk and as we do our daily things and as we're so busy being Christians, Lord, I pray that you would remind us to show other people the things that you've done for us. I pray that you would speak to our hearts and you would be with us as we seek to apply this to our life. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. When you look at Matthew, before chapter 9, there's really not a whole lot that goes on before that. In the first chapter is the genealogy of his life, all the things leading up to Jesus' life. The second chapter is him being born, the Christmas story, a lot of that. And then the third chapter is him being announced by John the Baptist and being baptized. The fourth chapter is him going out into the wilderness and then his to be tempted by the devil. But then his ministry really starts in chapter 5. And chapter 5, 6, and 7, he himself is, after he saw the multitudes, he gave the Sermon on the Mount and he taught the people himself. Matthew chapter 8 and chapter 9 is filled with miracles. He heals sick people. He heals people from their leprosy. He heals people of being lame. He heals people being possessed by a demon. And he does all these different things for all these different people. But what you notice about everything that happens is that Jesus was the only one doing anything. He said something to his disciples, which indicates the fact that he had disciples with him. But up until this point, none of them were doing anything. None of them were feeding people. None of them were giving anybody water. None of them were clothing anybody. Jesus was doing all of that himself. And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion because there was no one left to help him. There's no laborers. The laborers are few. There's plenty of people that need to be reached, but I'm not always going to be here. What then? Who will reach the people after I'm gone? I need laborers. Being in California, I miss the color green. I came home and I forgot how green my yard was. When you go to California, somebody might have like a 10 by 10 patch of grass, and that is their yard, and they are proud of it. And it's funny. I laugh at them. It's like, they have a nice yard. It's like, no, they don't. But here we know all about that. We have green all over the place. We have crops. People are surprised when I say that I pass 5 or 6 cornfields on the way to church. But I love harvest season because all of those crops, all those acres and acres of fields are all grown up and they're all green and they all have those little tassels on the top and they're ready to be picked. But there comes a time when all of those fields are brown. And the time to harvest them is done. Sometimes you go into cornfields and there's still corn stalks on some of those cornfields. But they're not usable anymore for a lot of things. The time to harvest them is over. And what Jesus is saying is the harvest is plenteous. The harvest is white. The harvest is ready. And there's people that are ready to be reached. But if I don't have enough people to go out into these multitudes and multitudes of harvest to be reached, they won't all be reached. They won't all be picked. And the time to pick them will be over. But we have no volunteers. Why are there so few volunteers? From this passage, I notice 3 reasons why there aren't any volunteers. Because we do not have compassion. Jesus was moved with compassion when he saw the multitudes. The word there, as my dad, I'm sure, has explained, and I've heard so many times, the word moved with compassion all comes from one word, and it literally means to yearn in your bowels. And your bowels doesn't necessarily mean your stomach was sick, but your bowels in that time was really meant to indicate the seat of your love and your pity. You were moved and you yearned in the deepest part of your soul for the people. But so often that's missing from Christians. We're too busy pointing our fingers at the world than we are actually having compassion on the people. Why wouldn't we have compassion? Because we're too busy complaining about their sin. A preacher preached a message on the Good Samaritan, and I was thinking, okay. Always heard the story. We hear the story all the time. He made an interesting application at the beginning. He talked about the road when he visited Israel. He visited that road from Jerusalem to Jericho, which is the road that the Israelite had traveled in the story of the Good Samaritan. And he said, to be honest, that road was known as being dangerous. You look down the road, it's not very well made, but there was caves and there was holes all over the place. And everybody knew that if you were to go down that road, you were in danger of thieves that were going to sit in those caves. They were waiting for people. And he said for the Israelite to go down that road by himself, to be honest, was an unwise decision. So for him to be laying on the side of the road was heartbreaking, but it wasn't really unexpected when you knew the circumstances. It wasn't, oh, somebody robbed this man? How could they possibly do that? He went down the road by himself. What can you do? That's what happens. And so when the Levite and the priest walked by and passed on the other side, it's probably because, well, he made an unwise decision. I have things to do, and he's suffering the consequences of his own unwise decisions. So I can go out of my way, and I can do things for him, but if he doesn't ever figure this out for himself, then he's not going to learn. So it's not my problem, because he should have known better. But we're so busy pointing our fingers at the world and shaking our fists at the problems that we're too busy to actually have compassion on the people. And you can stop and you can make the application of the fact that the Samaritan and the Israelite were really enemies by nature, and that he stopped and he helped him anyway. But we forget about the fact that everybody else just went on the other side, and that wasn't really uncommon from what a lot of Christians do today. We look at people hurting, we see people falling apart, we see families, we see mothers yelling at their children, we see people leaving their spouse, and we're too busy saying, well, you should have known better. You should have seen that coming. So I could help you, and I can have compassion on you, or I can just let you suffer the consequences of your own decision. That's what those people did. But we won't have compassion if we're too busy complaining about their sin. But maybe we don't have compassion on people because we're too busy enjoying their sin. It's difficult to have compassion on somebody who's wrapped up in an immoral lifestyle if we ourselves are struggling with our thought life. It's difficult to have compassion on somebody who went to jail for being a thief if we're okay with taking something ourselves. It's difficult to have compassion on people who are wrapped up in their sin if we sometimes would rather be in that circumstance ourselves. Turn to Jude verse 22. There's only one chapter, don't worry. Book of Jude, verse 22, almost at the back. Jude 22 says, and of some have compassion, making a difference, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garments spotted by the flesh. In order to make a difference, you have to have compassion. But in order to have compassion, you can't enjoy the sin of the people to whom you would have compassion on. And our lives sometimes get so spotted and so spotted by the world and corrupted by the world that we live in, and we walk through and we do it and we don't even realize it, and it gets on our flesh, it gets on our garment, it gets spotted, and it takes away our compassion because our lives start to seep into the same problems that they do. Paul wrote about Demas in one of his letters, and about how much he helped him and how much he was laboring with him to minister to people who had problems, who needed help. But the next time you hear Demas's name, it says that he forsook him, having loved this present world. Demas was unable to have compassion on other people because he loved the world that they were living in. You will not have compassion if you do not hate the sin of the people you'd have compassion on. And true compassion comes from God. But even if we want to be used, sometimes God won't allow us to be used because we have dirty hands. I was studying the book of Haggai last year, And that was when he was trying to rebuild the temple after the captivity. They went to Babylon, they destroyed the temple, they came back, and they were trying to build it up. The first part of the chapter, the first part of the book, he talks about build the temple. Don't build your own houses. Build my temple. Build my house. And then after that, the next section talks about them doing sacrifices and performing actions and giving things to God. And he asks them a question. If you have something unholy and it touches something that is holy, does that holy thing become unholy? And they said, well, yeah, it does. And he said, that's what everything you're giving to me is like. All of the actions that you're making cause everything you're giving me to be unholy, and I'd rather not even have it. In verse 14 of Haggai chapter 2, it says, so this is my people, and so this is the nations before me, saith the Lord, and so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer is unclean. I'd rather not even have your sacrifice. I'd rather not even have your gifts. I'd rather not even have your work if you're going to give it to me with unclean hands. You're not going to have compassion if your hands are unclean, but God won't even want to use you if your hands are unclean. Just a few days ago, we were setting up this really big banquet for 800 people, a lot of chairs and a lot of tables, and we rented them all. And we had them all outside, and all the guys were bringing them in. All the guys were setting them up. I was straightening them. We were putting all the chairs down. The funny thing is, all these chairs and all these tables are white. And so you don't think about it. But after you set up table after table after table, and you move chair after chair after chair, and we straighten after straighten, and then we move and we move, and then at the end of this huge banquet, you look down, setting up white chairs and tables, and your hands are black. There's just a little bit of dirt on every single thing that you touched. And so your hands were completely filthy. And then the next step in setting up the banquet was to put out all these tablecloths, white, pure tablecloths. And all the girls are about to do it, and all the guys grab them, and I told them all, I said, if you're going to set up those tablecloths, then go and wash your hands. Because so many times we've set up a banquet, and you look down, and you're making sure everything's straight, and there's fingerprints all over every single tablecloth because they didn't wash their hands. I'd rather them not help me if they weren't going to wash their hands, because then it just made it dirty. Then it wasn't clean. And sometimes the Lord wants us to help him, and he wants to use us, and he wants us to be working for his kingdom, but our hands are so dirty that we need to leave, and we need to wash them first. Or else he'd rather not even have our help, because what the things that we do becomes unclean. And if we clean our hands, then we can have compassion. But we will not volunteer if we don't have compassion at all. There are so few volunteers because we do not have compassion. But secondly, there are so few volunteers because we cannot see people. There's 7.2 billion people in the world. 319 million of those live in America. Almost 13 million live in Pennsylvania. Numbers. Numbers. Every second, 4 people are born, and every minute, 250 people are born. But every second, 1.8 people die, and every minute, 160 people die. Numbers. Numbers. This past Easter weekend at the church where I go to college, we were able to reach over 10,000 people. That Saturday, right before that Sunday, the college students were able to lead a park ministry where we were able to go to 12 different parks throughout the valley and have games and prizes and egg hunt, and then we had a rally. In all of those, we had 3,000 people reached, and 192 people were saved. 250 people were saved that whole weekend through the ministry of that church. Numbers. A lot of those statistics, besides the last ones, you probably heard. You've probably heard how many people there are in the world, and you've probably heard how many people die and live and are born every second. But we get so caught up with the numbers and the statistics and the unthinkable amount that we forget about the fact that all of those numbers are people. And when Jesus saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, not because there was a lot of them, but because they were people. People are fainting. He was moved with compassion on them because they fainted. I looked at that word and I thought, what does that mean, they fainted? I mean, are they just physically tired? Did they just not have enough energy left? Were they just following him too long? But when you look at verse 35, it says that he healed every sickness and every disease among the people. The whole last two chapters he spent taking care of their physical needs. Why would he say they fainted? He had just met all of their physical needs. But that word fainted can literally mean faint-hearted, downtrodden, empty. We wonder why the world is so angry, because they're downtrodden, they're faint-hearted, they have nothing to hope for. You know, we look at the third world countries and the people that have literally nothing, and then we look at people in the neighborhood down the street whose houses are bigger than most people in the world. And both of them are faint-hearted. Is it because one has more than the other? Sometimes the poor people are happier than the rich people, because possessions and physical needs being met do not bring fulfillment. And in spite of the fact that Jesus was healing blind people and healing lame people and giving people food and giving people water, which they needed, in spite of that, people were still fainting. Because that's not what brings hope. Why are we so surprised when the world who has not Jesus does not have his joy? People are fainting. People are scattered abroad. What does that mean? It literally means to hurl, or to throw, or to abandon, or neglect, to put off to the side, to forget about, to be used. People are used every day, and neglected and forgotten, because they have no one to remember them. These people were used by several different things. They were abandoned, they were neglected, and they were scattered abroad by a lot. By physical problems, yeah. They had physical needs, they had physical problems. And the funny thing is, we always sing about the fact that God can provide for us. But if they don't have Jesus, then they are incapable of providing for their needs. They have nobody to provide for them. No wonder they can never figure out their finances. No wonder they can never figure out their physical needs, because the source of provision that we like to have, they're absent of. They're abandoned by religion. He just rebuked the Pharisees for being blind guides, because people are always led astray by religion all the time. And yet they're willing to give it their time and their energy and their money. I was thinking the other day about a country we learned about at college. And one of the Hindu practices is to have prayer wheels. You literally write a prayer inside of a wheel. And when you spin the wheel, they believe that it stirs up the prayers and the God sees them and it brings favor on their life. In the corporate marketplaces, they'll have huge prayer cylinders. And when you walk by, the common practice is to just spin them on the way by, because it'll bring you favor as you go. Some rich people can afford prayer wheel wells. They just have a river and then it spins their prayer wheel for them. I guess that makes it easy. Some poor people keep a personal one. They have a little one on a stick, and there's a weight attached to it. And all day you can see them spinning their wheel, just trying to get favor, just trying to get fulfillment. Religion is not helping them, but they're trying their best to get it to, and it never will. People are fainting and scattered abroad by religion, by physical needs, and even by Satan. He had to heal several people that were possessed by a demon. And Satan will offer so much fulfillment in your life and never give it to you. It talks about, in 1 Peter 5:8, to be sober and vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about to give you what you want, to seek whom he may devour. Jesus says to Peter, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. John 10 says, the thief cometh not, but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come, that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. In Psalm 142:4 says, I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. And that's the prayer of so many people in the world that we miss. Yeah. I was trying to get this one lady to come to church. The first time I talked to her brother. I've been trying to get them to come to church for months now. I visit every Saturday. She expects me to come by. Oh, hey, Nathan, how was your day? And I was like, if you know me that much, just come to church and we'll talk there. And she sees me every week and she says, we'll try to come this week. Maybe not tomorrow, but I promise we'll come. And a couple weeks ago, she made this statement. I ran into her right as she was getting in her car. And she was about to leave, and she gave me a second, and she talked to me for a minute, and she said, no, we'll come, I promise. Don't give up on us. Don't give up on us. Why? Because people have been given up on. Don't give up on us. Another lady I talked to, her name was Latina. We were able to lead her to the Lord, but when I came to her house, I was just coming to see if her kids wanted to come on the bus. And she stopped me and she asked me a few questions because she was about 40. She had been in a relationship that she knew she wasn't supposed to be. She mentioned that to me. She was now pregnant with her fifth child. She was being evicted and the father was gone. And she said she wanted an abortion. We were able to talk her out of that. And after leading her to the Lord, she was so happy. But she said this statement to me. Are you going to forget about me? Why? Because the world forgets about people. Because the world abandons people. Because the world scatters people. People are fainting. People are scattered. And people have no shepherd. We talk about sheep a lot. And sheep are dumb. Sheep make unwise decisions. Sheep find themselves in unheard of situations. And you're quite curious about how the sheep got there or what he thought before he got there. Sheep will walk off a cliff because the guy in front of them walked off. Sheep will fall in a ditch because there was food just on the other side of the ditch and they didn't see the ditch in between. Sheep will wander off because they don't know where to go. And we yell at the sheep and we call the sheep dumb, but the fact is the sheep are not intentionally trying to cause problems. The sheep are not trying to be ignorant. The sheep are not trying to be difficult. The sheep are just trying to go where they need to go. And they figure that if the guy in front of them went there, then that's where you're supposed to go. That's the best decision that they could make. The sheep are just trying to provide for their needs. They're just trying to stay alive. They're just trying to do what they need to do. The only reason they make unwise decisions, the only reason they find themselves in such precarious situations, is not because they're trying to cause problems. It's just because they have no shepherd. And we look at the world and we see all of the crime and we see all of the families falling apart and we look at them and say, what were you thinking? You're causing me so many problems because now I have to deal with your family situations. You're calling me so many problems because you've made a mess of your life. And they probably aren't trying to be difficult. They're probably not trying to cause a problem. They're not trying to rip their life apart. They're just trying to do what they think is right. And everybody else is going this way, so that has to be the right thing to do. And this seems like the most logical things to do because that's what I think at the moment. And the only reason I would make a wrong decision, the only reason I would mess my life up, it's because I have no shepherd. I was listening to all the songs we sang this morning and this evening. And I was listening to them, and I thought, these are good songs. But the world cannot truthfully sing them. None of it applies to them. Have you ever thought about the fact that the world has never been able to truthfully quote Psalm 23? Because the Lord is not their shepherd. And they do want. They've never been made to lie down by green pastures. They've never been led by still waters. Their soul has never been restored. They've never been led by the paths of righteousness for anyone's sake. And they will walk through the valley of the shadow of death and be terrified of evil. Because no one is with them. People have no shepherd. We fail to have compassion, and we fail to see people. That's why we don't volunteer. But last, we fail to volunteer because we will not labor. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he'll send forth laborers. A laborer is a worker. A laborer is somebody who expends time and energy. A laborer is somebody who is willing to give of his own self for the sake of something else. But the reason we don't labor, according to Proverbs, is because we're lazy. The desire of the slothful man killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. And sometimes we don't labor just because it's hard. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore, he will beg in harvest and have nothing. When the harvest is done, because he didn't want to labor, because he didn't want to plow, because it was hard, he won't have anything. And as he comes before the judgment seat of Christ, after the harvest was here, after the harvest was white, and after the time is over, and there's no more time left, he will have nothing because he refused to labor. Today we reap, or we miss our golden harvest. We can always find a reason not to labor for God. And there can always be a reason. There will always be something in the way. But if we refuse to labor, we will not see any harvest for ourselves or for anyone around us. So why don't we have any volunteers? Because no one has compassion. No one sees people. and we refuse to labor. I like the crops that we pass every week, every day. I like all the cornfields. And they're green, and they're pretty, and they're nice to look at. But when the harvest comes and the harvest passes, if the master of the field has nobody to help him labor, then the time will be over, and there will be no one that will benefit from that harvest. Why don't we have any volunteers? Tonight, it was a simple message. But really, it's all contingent on whether or not you decide to obey. Because he told us to preach the gospel. And I can spend a longer amount of time, and I can go longer, and I can exposit more passages, but really it's all dependent on whether or not we choose to follow. Do we have volunteers? Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for your opportunity that you give us to reach the world with your word. I thank you for all the things that we enjoy from it, and all the passages that we hold dear, all the promises that we love. I thank you for giving us your son. But Lord, I pray that we wouldn't be negligent in showing the world your son as well. Speak to our hearts, Lord.